Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special interview for you as former Assistant HUD Secretary Dylan Reed Partner and the publisher of the Solaria Report, Catherine Austin Fitz, will be joining us. Now, Catherine has been warning of a digital concentration camp with the advent of digital passports and the central bank digital currency. Tonight, she'll walk us through that dangerous scenario of total control that humanity is heading into unaware, and also how the FTX scandal and political fallout is part of the program. Please join us. Now. Catherine, let's start this off here with inflation.
It's the thing that's on everyone's mind nonstop. What are they doing with this? Because they knew it had to come from their actions and all the payoffs during the pandemic, et cetera. Are they just trying to run everyone's savings to oblivion, basically?
Well, this is a reset. Mm-hmm. And so you're accelerating the slow burn. You're printing money and injecting it into the places you want to grow. And then the places that don't get it are killed by inflation, and you shrink them and pick their assets up cheap. So you're in a slow burn, slow kill. I mean, it's an accelerating slow burn, but it's no different than the slow burn we've had all along.
Right, which you think started in the mid-90s.
Yes, it started in the mid-90s. I mean, if you go back and you look at how the dollar's been run since the Fed came into existence, you know, we've been slow burning since the Fed existed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what 2% inflation regularly up when insiders are keeping ahead of the game and outsiders are dragging behind. But it's much, much smaller, much more subtle. Mm-hmm. So
these people that have been saving money all these years and have equity in a house and all the rest of it, they wake up after 2 years of inflation and their money is worth half of the value.
If they kept it in deposits. Remember, in 1980, I could get 8% on my bank CD.
It's incredible.
Okay. So zero risk and I get
8%. Wow.
So it makes sense to save.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Now I get nothing and there's risk. Why mm-hmm. save? Why not just go out and buy, 2 years worth of office supplies and 2 years worth of, provision?
Right. Right. Yeah. And the system for doing that, you're saying the slow burn thing, then it's just more, the inflation part is just another piece of this.
Well, when we started to print and expand the money supply in the mid to late 90s, that was part of stealing all the money out of the federal government. And you could offset it with labor deflation globally. Mm-hmm. So by moving lots of manufacturing and other things to Asia, you dramatically reduce the cost of labor, and that deflation offset your monetary inflation. Okay. And there have been various things. I like to think of Anthony Fauci as a deflation to go machine. Anthony, mm-hmm. shut the economy down for another week. Too much inflation.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. When Almarova was nominated for control of the currency, she had just published an article in the Vanderbilt Law Review saying inflation is a problem. No problem with CBDC. You just freeze everybody's bank accounts. They can't get any money.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How close do you think they are to doing that? Because we've seen them do extreme moves out of the blue, like the lockdown.
I think the fastest they could try is maybe a year, year and a half. What they seem to be doing is with the WHO treaty and the vaccine passports, getting a complete control system in place before CBDC. Because I think they need another 2 years. Maybe they can do it in a year, but mm-hmm. now. I really think they're going to fail. So,
right. You don't think this is a winning formula on their side?
No. I think, I walked out in 1998 because I said, your plan won't work. I'm out.
Right.
It won't work. So.
Yeah. We've seen signs of cracks in that consolidation, but it's moving fast. The whole system that's moving in.
Right.
The CBDC got a huge boost from this FTX situation.
FTX was an op that got brought down in an op. Okay. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I was going to ask you about it, but immediately after it happened, they said, you know what? We need that regulation.
That's part of the op.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. You know, FTX was a CBDC marketing plan. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, how are you going to market slavery? Right. It's hard.
It is.
You need lots of contrived events.
Up until a month before that crash, they had Freed on the cover of Fortune magazine. They had him on Meet the Press. They were hailing him.
Well, the Times just put out an invite to come hear Freed speak with Yellen. And did you see that?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's very funny because they feel much more empowered to just, you know, just do an op and make it obvious it's an op. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, election over, bring down the laundry and make sure the bankruptcy court and DOJ have control of all the documents.
Amazing.
You know, wow. And while you're at it, pull the money out.
Right. And Friedman, he was so connected in fundraising for Biden and all that whole DNC operation.
Well, I wouldn't call it connected. You know, it's amazing if you give away $30 million, how many friends you can suddenly have.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't call that connection. I just call that, you know, check receipt.
Well, considering all the kind of misgivings that you've had about the advent of crypto, the way that they've done it, and that you don't trust it as a digital system, there's not a kind of a safety there for people's money. It's pretty interesting. When that hit, I immediately thought of you and your concerns about it, and all the people have been waving flags around crypto for the past couple of years without really considering the kind of losses that could happen overnight.
So here's the issue. When I talked about crypto, what I was talking about the control grid and how it worked. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard a crypto expert who understood the control grid and how it worked. Mm-hmm. So they understood crypto, but they didn't understand the control grid and how it gets implemented, whether on the regulatory side, whether on the control side, whether on the surveillance side. And there was just an extraordinary naivete about that. There was also naivete about how you run an excellent custodian operation. You know, running an excellent custodian operation is very, very difficult. And when you do it in an experienced, seasoned institution, you've got an institution that has, you know, a couple decades to a couple centuries of history of every fraud you can think of.
Right.
You know what I mean? They've had every fraud in the book. You know, the encyclopedia of fraud's gotten run on them, right? And they've survived. So, you know, a lot of the people who started trying to do things like exchange just had no history and no depth in that area. And right. It was obvious it was going to be trouble.
So, right. And then they started to hail it as a personal philosophy, like, I'm free from fiat currency. You know, this is the future.
Well, but I, you know, my heart goes out to them because that's what we all want. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I do think if we had a successful governance system on planet Earth, we would want to have cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. You know, we would want to have digital systems that have integrity. I would love to have digital systems that have integrity, but we don't. We don't have any digital systems that have integrity. In fact, they were created to institute control and suck us in with convenience. And they've done a great job, right?
Yes.
So it right now, not forever, it doesn't have to be this way, but right now, digital equals no integrity.
Right.
Right.
This
is where we've arrived.
And they've done the pump and dump on Bitcoin before. They've moved it through the systems. They've got the data feedback. So now they want to consolidate that type of action into CBDC.
Well, here's the question. That you can take any cryptocurrency on the planet, whether it's Bitcoin or, I mean, take the full range, whether it's crypto that are deemed to be securities or crypto that are deemed to be commodity assets, whatever they're deemed to be under a regulatory structure. You know, the regulators can shut them down pretty quickly, whenever they want. You know, if you look at the Australian regime, all they said was, okay, everybody who provides an in and out has to go through the big banks and they have to be licensed. Hello, you know, overnight, bam, they got complete control of every person and every bank account. Ba-boom, like that.
Yeah.
Right? So for the regulators to assert control is a relatively easy process. There may be political fallout or whatever. You know, as you can see, even just doing ops can destroy the really harm the liquidity in the market. Wait a minute, I'm going to go see what the Bitcoin price is today.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Bitcoin, if anybody should be immune to the FTX risks, it should be Bitcoin. But look at how much Bitcoin has come off because, okay, so we're down to 16,000. I mean, if you look at Bitcoin at the charts, I think it could go down another 50% before it finds a floor.
Wow.
Now, there's no way to me it goes to zero unless the regulators just say, okay, we're going to kill Bitcoin, which if I were them, I would never do. Doesn't make sense. But
why?
You know, so
why doesn't it make sense?
Never waste political capital having a fight you don't need to have.
Okay.
You could marginalize Bitcoin without killing it. So why bother? Why bother to kill it? You know, because if you really intentionally sat back and killed Bitcoin, you know, you'd create a lot of enemies who are not without skills and power and ability. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of people are already vested in it, a lot of forces.
Right. So just let them trade. You know, I think it's just using it as a prototype is worth more than killing it. I don't see why you would ever kill it. And you can pump and dump it again.
Right.
So why would you kill it? It doesn't, I don't know.
Interesting.
It's very possible, you know, somebody can say, look, I just don't want to be bothered. Kill all the prototypes and take them out. You know, I want complete control, boot in the face. I mean, once they get vaccine passports and CBDCs, they can do that.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And this is
then you're talking about a slavery system and then they can do whatever they want. But the way they'll take down crypto is not by taking down the crypto. They'll take down the people, you know, involved in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll assert control of the in and out, and then you'll assert the control of all the people you need to assert control of to get control.
Wow. That reminds me, there's a story connected around this whole FTX thing. It happened a week prior. I'm actually going to read you the guy's quote. Brilliant young cryptocurrency pioneer named Nikolai Mashugian tweeted on October 28th that intelligence agencies were going to murder him and was found dead on a Puerto Rico beach hours later. This is his quote. CIA and Mossad and pedo elite are running some kind of sex trafficking entrapment blackmail ring out of Puerto Rico and the Caribbean islands. That's what he wrote. And then 5 hours later, he's found dead.
Right.
You talk about ops out in the open. That's pretty out in the open.
'63, they killed the president.
Yes. Right.
The Secret Service slowed down. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been out in the open for a long time, I think.
That's interesting, too, with the 59th anniversary of that. It's like the system, you know, that started there, which Peter Dale Scott calls it the first deep state revolt against the White House, the first one. But that is an acceleration there that takes place. And we've kind of been in an echo of that for generations here.
Right, right, right. I don't know. You know, my whole life, the centralization just continues to grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And yet, most of the people that I know or deal with, not all, but most, continue to think that their bread is buttered by cooperating.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes it possible for the system to grow is the cooperation. In other words, yes, it's Mr. Global doing this, but the thing that makes the system work is millions of us doing the work and making it work.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the power to stop.
Right.
Why don't we? Why do we continue to choose slavery over freedom. Now, there are many, many different reasons. I can explain this fact pattern, that fact. You know, we can get complex and go through all of it all day long. But the reality is we have the power to stop this. And we haven't exercised it so far. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I continue to hear from someone, oh, well, it's okay if I bank at JP Morgan Chase. I'm only one person. My account isn't big and I shouldn't have to be bothered. And have you seen the latest queue? You know, because that's entertaining and gives you permission to stay on your couch because the, you know, the spooky guys are going to fix it.
Right.
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 Right. Yeah. Right.
That whole op around that, the white hat type thing, has been very effective in putting people in a weird false positive mindset.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at, you know, there's a certain amount of us who spend a lot of time on online or reading online news. Because of what I do. But, you know, when I just got back from a trip across America, and most people are just too busy in the real world to be bothered with all of that horse bucky. Do you know what I mean? Which is good.
Yeah.
They're just like outside running through the woods and they don't have time for any of that.
Well, I wanted to mention this because with the advent of the pandemic and all the things that they were pulling around that, you spent a good deal of time out of America. When you came back in, how did it feel to you? I mean, you said you had some vibrant experiences, but what was the vibe?
So I had some friends who live in Europe who are Americans who went back, and they were on the coasts. And they came back absolutely freaked, and they said, I might never go back again.
Wow.
You know, they walked right into bizarro world. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this. On our news trends and sections that we do quarter with Dr. Farrell, mm-hmm. 2 quarters ago, I said, that's it. I've had it. We're going to take all the stories that belong under Bizarro World. We're going to create a section called Bizarro World, and we're going to put them all there because you can't see what's really going on in the world because every area is overrun by these Bizarro World stories that are detracting people from understanding what's really going on. So we're just going to all put it into... You know, I have the picture of the lady screaming for the Shriek-O-Meter, and, you know, they're all over there in Bizarro World.
What's a good example for Bizarro World story?
Oh, you know, like the drag queens, you know, teaching 4-year-olds mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Or, well, I'll just go to Bizarro World. You want me to go to Bizarro
yeah,
World?
Sure,
it's just unbelievable, some of the stories. Or, you know, like a guy who just invented a virtual reality headset that if you die in the game, it kills you. Yeah. I mean, it's very William Gibson,
yeah.
You know, neuromancer kind of thing.
When we had people like Huxley writing Brave New World in 1930, giving us this whole thing about Soma and the feelies and all that kind of thing, basically outlining virtual reality before it hit, those people, you know, that's 90 years later, but Orwell and Huxley, they're sort of neck and neck for that vision of the future. And it seems uncannily accurate.
Right. So here's, I'm just going to read you some. Okay. I'm just, so under there, how many sections are there? There are 10 Bizarro World sections.
Okay.
First is transhumanism, the latest from Frankenscience, headless human embryos, synthetic embryo with brain and heart formed without using eggs or sperm. Wow. Biden signs executive order designed to unleash transhumanist hell on America. Lawyers with chips implanted in their brain will be better, faster, and cheaper than robotics. I'm just giving you a selection. Russia says Ukraine has mutant soldiers created in a lab. Here comes the U.S. Army's new super robo dog with sniper rifle.
Wow.
Okay, distraction. The term minor attractive persons normalizes pedophilia. John Rappaport, BBC, now officially insane. John Rappaport, sicko gender clinics, puberty blockers. Vanderbilt Pediatric Transgender Clinic nukes website after Matt Walsh exposes big moneymaker. You know, some doctor got on and said the transgender surgery for children was big moneymaker.
Right.
U.S. Senate ratifies Kalagi Amendment handing more sovereignty to the United Nations. Oh, God, Clinton on ESG, can you imagine? mind control, subliminal acoustic manipulation of nervous systems, nervous system manipulation by electromagnetic fields from monitors, edible lands, insects and their role in the transmission of parasitic diseases. That one is really frightening.
Wow.
Wait do you see how sick our annual wrap-up is going to be, a big presentation on synthetic food with a focus on lab-grown meat.
Fantastic.
And it's totally bizarro world. Anyway, so Incredible. It just goes on and on. That's just this quarter. The last quarter was even more bizarre.
So the idea anyway. They'll hit out with so many different things that an average person just won't know what to do. They'll throw up their hands and say, well, I have to believe the official reality.
I think it's so scary. Throwing up all the bizarro world is so scary that it makes you just want to withdraw and go into your shell, or, you know, it's fine. I'll believe the official narrative if I can get. Remember, here's the trick. We all crave coherence. Mm-hmm. And if you do things that make people incoherent, but promise them that if they do what you say, they can get back to a coherent world, then they'll buy into it. Right.
Let's take one of those bizarro pieces, though, because it stands out to me in terms of the amount of effort behind it. And that's the gender push to eliminate genders, to confuse that whole issue in a way that we've never seen in human history.
Well, but it's tracking. If you look at what's happening with birth rates, you know, you've seen one set of our bizarre stories, not this quarter, but the couple quarters ago, mm-hmm. are babies who grow in incubation, you know, in incubators, you know, so right. You have an incubator in your living room and your baby is growing in the incubator, not in you.
Yes.
And that plus the sterilization of women. I mean, it looks to me with CRISPR technology that the leadership has decided they will decide what genes come into the world and not nature.
Right.
So God will not decide what genes come into the world instead, and nature won't have anything to do with it. Instead, it will be, you know, the human resource director in the sky.
It's so far out.
I'll tell you why it's not far out. If you look at the things that we know for a fact have been going on in this planet since World War II, mm-hmm. you know, the only thing that has happened is we all agreed to take everything that was far out and pretend it wasn't happening.
Right.
Okay.
So it was in the realm of science fiction.
I don't know. We took reality and moved it into a fictional space. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if you look at every weird thing that's gone on in this planet since World War II, you know, there's a science fiction movie about it.
Yeah.
There's a fictional movie or a fictional TV show about it.
Yes.
But it's not allowed in normal land. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just like Disney World. There's this wonderful world with Minnie and Mickey, and then there's a world below that's engineering that world, right?
Right.
So there is nothing happening now that is stranger than the things that have gone on, particularly given all the people doing those strange things have never been held accountable or stopped. So it would ultimately make sense that they would move out of control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you double down and double down and double down, at some point the multiplication leads to every place. So
right.
I don't see anything going on this planet, you know, that in one shape, form, or another hasn't been going on for years and years and years.
So would you say it's more out of the closet?
It's more out of the closet, and it's infinitely more creative.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it's almost like they're trying to keep everybody busy mm-hmm. with, you know, various things on a theme. But I don't know. You know, there's a lot of weird things been going on this planet for a long, long time.
Yes.
And if you're someone like me, you know, you have to go back and forth among all these worlds that are pretending it's not really happening when it's clearly happening.
So they figured out a human function there, which is in our psychology somehow. We're prone to kind of put the white noise out to things that we don't want to look at. And they took advantage of that. Is that reasonable assessment?
I think it's more complicated than that. But I think there we believe that if you dwell on something, you attract it.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to keep the organized crime out, and we want to keep bizarre world out, and we don't want to attract it. And I think that's a very healthy, natural tendency.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point, though, at which, you know, it's very important to know when to duck. And if your map is so insufficient and such a lie that you don't know when to duck, you know, then you can't practice good risk management, and then you're in real trouble. And of course, that makes you easy to harvest, which is the goal.
Interesting. We can go all the way back. It's interesting because Eisenhower, everyone goes to this point that he made this military, you know, beware of the military industrial complex, but he warned about the scientific dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was looking at it then and seeing, oh, this is where it's going to go. I'm in 1961, and he's looking down the road into the 21st century and saying, this is how things are going to play out.
Right. So he saw, I mean, when you put the CIA and the intelligence agencies in the position to be the most powerful bank in the world and combine it with complete immunity from the law, you've got a completely out-of-control transnational organized crime
right
infrastructure, and it's only going to get worse. So, I mean, he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've never known whether that story about, you know, when the CIA refused to report to him about what was going on at Area 51.
Yes.
So it was reported that he called them up and said, if you are not in my office tomorrow with a complete briefing of where, you know, everything that's going on, I'm going to fly to Colorado, get the which army was it? It was the, one of my cousins used to be in that army, I forget, but I'm going to get the Third Army or whatever it was and invade Area 51. And being Eisenhower, he could do it. He knew how to do it. He knew where the levers were. He could push the buttons and he could do it.
Yeah.
You know, and they were in his office the next day reporting. But, you know, that was the problem Kennedy had. He had never been a general. He didn't have the command and loyalty or knowledge of the military. And, you know.
The military had contempt for him.
I don't know enough about his relationship with the military. I think after the, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, that may have been the case for some, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
There had to be a tremendous number of generals going, thank God.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely. It's very interesting because I was reading about a general he was going to put in as a CIA director 2 months before he died. And that general went on to be a big anti-Vietnam activist. So it's kind of fascinating.
What was his name?
General David Shoup.
It is quite interesting because when I went back into their relationship, I saw them together a lot in that last year of his life. And there's a lot of pictures of them together.
Right.
And interestingly enough, his granddaughter, this general's granddaughter, got in touch with me.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So there's wonderful. a lot of things there. But he was planning on becoming CIA director, this person. So there was going to be a shift there. And this might open up some of that story that's hanging out back there, because there's a lot right. of strangeness. Also, I wanted to mention this to you, and it's fitting that we're talking about Kennedy. But so there's this phone conversation that Judge Napolitano talks about, where he was talking with President Trump when Trump was going to release the Kennedy records. And then Napolitano, who was friends with him at the time, although that changed later, gets him on the phone and says, why aren't you releasing them? And he said, I can't. You wouldn't believe what's in there. And then Napolitano said, well, you promised you can't treat people like children. This will work against you and all the rest of it. And Trump said, none of that matters. Andrew, if you were me, you couldn't let those records out. Trust me. You wouldn't believe it. That's the way Trump put it across to him. So those records have been kind of a political football for 60 years. And it's been very odd. Even a lot of the people who study it don't understand, because they figure anything that was truly damaging would have come out a long time ago in any case. So there's this idea that I've put together, which is that when RFK met the CIA director immediately after the assassination, that there's some almost like booby trap or mechanism in there that they won't let them out, and that Trump was referring to that in his conversation, which is on record because Napolitano has said it now in 3 interviews.
Right. I don't know. You know, my inclination is to trust Trump, that when he saw what was in it, he realized, I can't let this out.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that was a presidential decision by the president.
Right.
So he was agreeing with the CIA assessment that you couldn't let it out.
When you get to everything that's gone on with the Mar-a-Lago raid and the strangeness around that, we've never had a president, an ex-president, raided before. How do you see that?
I'm assuming that a decision has been made to make sure that Trump is not a viable candidate in 2024. And that's what's up.
Yeah.
That's it.
So there's a Bilderberg get together. They decide, no way.
I would say it was a Bohemian Grove get together.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the Bilderbergers may have been in accord, but it was a Grove decision. It's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. And it's so all hands on deck.
I just think there's been a decision to make him impotent as a candidate.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, are they also trying to pull the country apart? In other words, it looks to me like there is one or more factions who would like to see the U.S. break up in a way that they can blame it on the people. In other words, it's not that we stole $21 trillion or $50 trillion and want to make sure you can't get it back. It's like, oh, the people forced us.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So you want to blame it on the people. And that, you know, that could be part of the divide, you know, the trying to get the divide and conquer to, when was the Mar-a-Lago raid? I'm trying to
August, mid-August.
Right. So the Grove would have ended in the first week of August. So,
okay.
I mean, it looks to me like a decision was made.
Mm-hmm.
And now, interestingly enough, that was the same time, I bet, that they decided to bring down FTX.
Oh, interesting.
You know, so they would use FTX to, you know, finance a rigged election, you know, sort of buy everybody off in multiple ways, keep the economy going. So you're trying to keep the economy going. And so they're shipping money to Ukraine, washing it back. And it could have been weapon sales too, because clearly weapon sales are likely to have gone on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but you have this huge laundry operation for multiple purposes, of which it had to be much bigger than FTX. It couldn't just be FTX.
Right.
But you decide you're going to bring FTX down right after the election because you don't need it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it in a way you're going to throw it under control of the bankruptcy courts and the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in August? Tom Brady and his wife go to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And come back looking very scared.
Yeah.
There's a cease and desist order that flies around at the same time. And the question is, why is Brady skipping, training? And I think the first two games of the season or something. I don't know. I have to look into the detail of it. But
he's getting a divorce as well.
Well, is he getting a divorce or is that for asset protection?
Yeah, right. Amazing.
Same as Gates.
They had him so wrapped in with that operation. He was doing commercials for it.
Right. So in theory, it depends on how but it sounds to me like he got a tip.
They needed that friendly face on top. Once in a while, we see these things crack, like Enron did, that opened up.
Well, to me, FTX just looks like Enron, too.
It does. Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Enron, if I'm right about Enron, and this is a guess, I'm not sure, can't prove this, but Enron was laundering the money they were pulling out of DOD and HUD.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the same people running the board as ran the big contract, the payment systems at DOD and HUD.
Mm-hmm.
So, the payment system guys are on both sides. And, and sort of that money is coming through. And then suddenly in August of 2001, Skilling quits. And I said, uh-oh, they clued him in on what's next. And he wanted to get out. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and 9/11 basically destroyed all the records of everything that was being laundered out.
Right.
And or that's what it appears. And, and then they put this guy in charge of cleaning up Enron, who just happens to be the guy they put in charge of cleaning up FTX. And if you're laundering on behalf of the New York Fed and the Exchange Stabilization Fund and basically, the government, the federal government depository, you know, it's the same cast of characters, the same crew, the same institutions. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is Enron too.
Absolutely fascinating.
Right, because the money shipping over to the Ukraine was coming out of the New York Fed as depository for the U.S. government, right? Mm-hmm. Same as Enron, if I'm right.
Yeah.
Right.
Would you say that, so crypto, in a sense, the way that they operated it, was a dream for the black operators, for the black budget?
Well, I think crypto, first and foremost, was simply a prototype for CBDCs.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Right. So, you know, here's the way we used to do it on Wall Street at the big firms. Solomon Brothers, perfect. You tell 10 different vice presidents to go do something. You wouldn't tell them that you told 9 other to do the same thing. And they'd all go try and do it. And they'd all come up with different ways of doing it. And then they'd end up competing and fighting with each other. And from it would emerge, it was a way of getting the best one fast. So yeah. Instead of asking one team and then firing them and getting a new, you just ask 10 guys to do the same thing. And that's the way you prototype. Prototyping is very organic and very messy. And you just try lots of stuff. And you know that most of them will fail. But in the process, you'll figure out what works.
Right.
So I think crypto first and foremost was a prototype for how you get to a digital control system.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's not to say that in a well-governed society, cryptos couldn't be great. They could. But
right.
We're not in a well-governed society. We're in a centrally controlled society that wants to exercise complete central control. And in that situation, crypto is the most dangerous thing you can do. Use cash.
Yes, cash is king.
Right. Well, a healthy system is part analog and part digital. Mm-hmm. You have excellent digital and you have excellent analog. And the mistake we're making is we're allowing Mr. Global to take it 100% digital, at which point we're in a digital concentration camp. We're toast. If we allow that, we're toast. It's over.
And that's the central banking digital currency. That's,
essentially,
the digital ID, the merger of those two, that's it.
You're in a slavery system. You're going to be in a digital concentration camp. If they want to take your kids, they will. No law. There's no law. It's a slavery system.
Right.
And they'll do whatever they want.
They could even do it and morally grandstand that they're doing it for climate change, for example.
Oh, right. Right. Cannibalism, good for climate change, you know. Now, you know, the only... What this comes down to is how effective. So I'm looking for a new word to describe what I've been, you know, I've been describing the phenomena of controlling people's minds and spirits, mind control or entrainment. Mm-hmm. But if you really, I was just looking at a picture of somebody before and after, you know, sort of when they were completely a prisoner of social media and the, you know, their phone, they were in the smartphone trance. Versus, you know, they broke the addiction and just got away from the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Radical, different, you know, much more time outdoors, much more time with people. One person is literally like, it's like their whole aura has been sucked into the machine.
Right.
You know, I come back to William Gibson, who is an author, science fiction author I love. And, in Neuromancers, in his books, people are jacking themselves into the scene. So their bodies are still in the chair, but their mind and their intelligence and their reality, their understanding of themselves, they've literally jacked in on the internet. Uh-huh. And so, but when you look at a person who's broken that addiction, instead they have a powerful aura and they have, you know, thousands of energetic or millions of energetic connection to all living beings around them, people, trees, you know, and it's much more complex and much richer and much more powerful. They have personal power. You know, now, you know, in the other picture, they're not even quite there. Their whole aura is disassociated and they're disconnected from life. They're disassociated. So there's some kind of energetic hacking going on, if you know what I mean. And here's the question. The question for each one of us is, are we resonating with life and each other? Or are we resonating with a machine? Because as I went across America, what I discovered was I would literally see people who were no longer present in the world. They were like on their phone like this, and they couldn't talk to another human being. They were just, they were just gone. They were in the machine. They were literally jacked in.
And that system, the Mr. Global system, wants that. They want them to vacate so that they can basically kind of control them.
Well, but did they want everybody to be like that? I mean, I don't know.
This is what I'm trying to kind of ask you from your own deduction, because you've been looking at this and said for a long time, what it comes down to is who are the people who are controlling and why are they doing what they're doing? Are you any closer to the answer on that?
Well, here's the thing, because I'm looking at the scenario design for, you know, we do these scenarios every year for portfolio strategy. Mm-hmm. And one axis is the rise in all-cause mortality, which this year we're going to describe it as democide.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not just the rise in all-cause mortality. There's the disability. There's the other, you know, the other things that make a democide. But it's the intentional destruction of humans. Right. And then the other axis, and is going to be sovereignty, mm-hmm. you know, which is our ability to assert sovereignty. But one of the most important issues in our ability to assert individual or tribal or national sovereignty is this issue of, are we going to allow our electromagnetic bodies to be harvested and controlled? Because if we are, there we will have no sovereignty. In other words, I can't act to understand what's going on in the world and to take action to protect myself. If my aura is in the machine, I'm completely, you know, I've lost me into the machine. If I'm resonating with the machine, I'm going to do whatever the machine tells me to do.
Exactly.
I'm not going to do what is in my own self-interest. And I have to say, over the last 3 years, I've had a rise of dealing day to day to day in all sorts of capacities with people who continue to act outside their own best interest.
Amazing.
You know, when I worked on Wall Street, you could kind of depend on most people to act in their self-interest.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
Well, this is quite fascinating what you're talking about with auras, because if you look at crowd scenes and different things, say from the 80s and 90s, for example, there does seem to be a remarkable difference between those people and these people.
Right.
It's hard to define, but it seems like they're more in the world, they're more in life. And these other people,
they're more grounded and they have more personal strength and power. They have energetic power.
Uh-huh.
They are energetically themselves, but they are connected. You know, they have thousands and thousands, if not millions, of connections energetically to all the living things. They're in cahoots. They're giving and getting intelligence from all the living things around them.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it looks like to me.
Incredible. You've always been brave about entertaining what's behind all this. And I've always appreciated that about you, because I know, you know, a lot of people in the world and in the things that you do would stay away from it. But
well, I'm a Christian first and foremost, and I absolutely believe the number one war going on is an interdimensional intelligence.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Bible calls it angels and demons. Other people call it, you know, fifth dimension intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think that we are operating, we are dealing with a spirit of evil that you have to describe and deal with spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think first and foremost, this is a spiritual war. And
it doesn't do justice just to talk about greed and avarice and war.
No,
it's something else.
No, it's something else. This is something more. The, you know, we have grown up in a world where we are hyper-materialists.
Yeah.
We are taught to be hyper-materialists. And the only thing that's real, you know, is what we can see that's concrete. But in fact, that's not the case. If you look at the most powerful technology today, it's invisible to the naked eye, number one. But then there's a whole bunch going on spiritually and energetically, you know, that just, if you were brought up to be a hyper-materialist as I was, you know, the process of learning about what's going on in the world spiritually and energetically is quite you know, it's quite baffling. And the only way I have any understanding at all, I try and read and study, but the only way of understanding it is just experience, you know. Yeah. I mean, I've seen things happen and be shifted energetically that are in complete defiance of all the laws of the material world. It's like, it's impossible that just happened, but it just happened.
So, yeah, right.
So, yeah. You know, and I've seen human intention change material reality. And that's, if you study William Tiller, that's what he says. Human intention changes material reality. And it does. I've seen it. And, you know, if you look at the really great churches, that's what they teach.
Interesting.
They teach a philosophy of, you know, a commitment to divine wisdom and principles and a commitment to faith that can, in fact, change material reality.
So it's a reference to something beyond the thin film of reality that we get to see.
It's a reference to how our world works.
Hmm.
Our world is not just material.
Yes.
Our world is not, you know, our world is many dimensions. We just operate in a few.
Have you ever, you know, you do so much scenario design for different things, business world, investment, and all the rest, social conditions. Have you ever thought about doing something like that in relation to, you know, here's the scenario design, the Mr. Global thing, what's behind it? It's aliens, it's interdimensional entities, it's, you know.
When I first started to delve into the governance model and who was really in charge.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a world where I had a lot of interaction with the people who were in charge, at least in America. So I kind of thought, okay, I know who's in charge. You know, it's basically the Rockefellers and their syndicate and the money behind them. And you know, so I never worried a lot about who was really in charge. It was like, you know, you just don't want to piss them off because it's dangerous. It was sort of my take on things. Anyway, but So when I first started to get into the governance, I signed up for Chris Milligan's, had a listserv called the CIA drug listserv. And it was started with who's dealing the drugs and goes up. And there was this huge war when I first got on it. And there was this group that said, it's all the Catholics. And they were rabid about it. And right. Not, I mean, mean, oof. And then you had another group that said, it's the Masons. And they were like, you know, equally disgusting. And then you had the group that was like, no, it's the Jews. And I kept saying, look, guys, you know, it's a big planet. And like Philadelphia, you can't bring the drugs unless you have, you know, the ports and the docks and the truckers. And that's the Catholics. And you can't do it unless you have the law firms and the banks. And that's the Masons. And then you have these other groups over here. That's the, you know, you can't do it with the Jewish syndicates. And they work together. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, they... they compete and they cooperate. And, you know, but you could never get these three groups to like have an intelligent conversation to integrate. Anyway, so I remember just being very frustrated with those folks. Anyway, so we do a 2-hour on who is Mr. Global. And after it's over, I realized we were at such a high level of the control that we never got down to the Masons, the Jews. And I thought, oh, there are going to be some ideologues who are going to be deeply disappointed with this.
The players anyway, on the ground, not the coaching.
Right. You know, and to me, you know, you have a couple of unanswered questions that if we could answer them would tell us a lot. One is, you know, how does interdimensional intelligence work and how does it interact with, you know, what's going on today? So that's number one. The second is, what is the invisible weaponry? Because I'm a great believer that we have a lot of powerful invisible weaponry that's a major driver. I think one of the things that's causing these, you know, you've got 190 plus countries that are doing what they were told in their, you know, against the best interests of themselves and their citizens. Why are they doing that? I think they are subject to weather warfare and invisible weaponry. I think they've got a gun to their head. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons they're behaving the way they're behaving. And they've got a gun to their head with weaponry that they can't tell their citizens about.
Right.
So, you know, so I love the Canadian leader who, you know, sort of intimated weather warfare was what had him.
Agreed.
Have you ever seen that one about the guy who says, I want to thank the people who sent the rain? And everybody's going, what? What's he talking about?
Catherine, just outstanding. Now stay right there and we'll do another round for our viewers at darkjournalist.com and have that for members this week. Of course, your latest Solari report is available at solari.com. Now we'll see everyone on Friday night at 8 p.m. for the Dark Journalist X Series. Remember, X Series 2023 is coming and you're going to want to be there for all the incredible, exciting episodes that we have coming up for you. See you soon.